This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm glad you decided to join me today. My promise to you is that if you take action on the information we provide each week, you will transform your health and your life. Before I introduce my guest for today's show, I want to invite you to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and download our free ebook, Overcoming Portion Distortion. It's packed with quick and easy ideas for making mealtime fun and healthy. So get your free copy today at eatgreatlivewellradio.com. We've got another great show planned for you. So grab a pen and paper and your favorite beverage and let's get started. My guest on today's show is Dr. Leslie Williams. Dr. Williams is a highly acclaimed family physician, a certified eating disorder specialist, and sought-after speaker. She completed her residency training at the well-respected Mayo Clinic in Arizona and then joined the Ramuda Ranch near Phoenix, one of the most trusted names in eating disorder treatment, and found her true calling. With her passion and experience, Dr. Williams then co-founded the Liberation Center of Phoenix, where she and her staff help patients to identify lifestyle modifications in addition to medications that can benefit the health of both the mind and the body. On today's show, we'll be talking with Dr. Williams about eating disorders and how anyone can create a healthier life for themselves. Even if you don't suffer from an eating disorder, I know you'll find our conversation today both insightful and motivating. Welcome, Dr. Williams.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited about this conversation because I think there's a lot of information out there, and I know that having an expert like yourself will really help people better understand it. And I'd like to start our conversation by asking you to tell our listeners a little bit more about your background and your work at the Liberation Center.
Sure. My background, as you stated, I did my initial training at the Mayo Clinic here in Arizona in family medicine, and I always knew that I had a passion for what I saw was kind of empowerment, kind of people learning more about their health and then feeling more empowered to live a healthy lifestyle. And I was first introduced to eating disorders by a medical director of Ramuda Ranch that came and spoke at my residency program. And I really loved what he had to say about it, but I was thinking of it more from the standpoint of obesity management and healthy lifestyle, and he told me to come learn more about eating disorders, and I was just fascinated by the connection between mind and body, and that's when I first got my introduction to working with patients from that perspective.
I love that you've really got that focus on the mind-body connection, because I think people often think it's just about their food choices, but there's so much more that goes into it.
Absolutely, and that's one of the things that I really work with my patients is helping them see that connection between mind and body. For instance, I saw a patient this morning, and she wanted me to do kind of a pre-op workup because she wants to get some plastic surgery done. And I asked her, why do you want to do that? And she said, well, because I think it will boost my self-esteem. And so that really opened the door for us to have this whole conversation about the fact that plastic surgery doesn't change self-esteem. You really need to figure out why you have those self-esteem issues to begin with prior to going into having this major radical surgery that may not give you that end result of improved self-esteem that you're looking for.
Absolutely. Do you find that a lot of people do look at kind of their outward appearance and think if they fix that, that everything's going to be okay, when it absolutely does start in the inside?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that we really try to work on with our patients is just regardless of your outward appearance, finding that inner thing that gives you passion, gives you happiness. That's really what we're helping them to achieve, because so often they'll spend their entire lives kind of trying to change something outward in terms of their physical appearance, thinking that it's going to provide happiness. And they're often disappointed when that isn't the case, because the issue really was more internal.
Absolutely. I love the fact that you really do both parts, and I wish more people, more doctors, would take that approach, because I think it would really help us get a handle on so many of the health issues and so many of the things people are doing today.
I agree. That's one of the things that has always frustrated me in terms of the medical community in general, is that things are very kind of compartmentalized, and our patients aren't compartmentalized. It's really hard for me to give you a pill for high blood pressure, for instance, and I don't take time to ask you what's going on in your life. What kind of stressors do you have? What kind of eating are you doing? Are you exercising? Like, those are important questions to ask, and I feel like I'm doing someone a disservice if I just treat the symptom and I don't really look at the whole person.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love that you take a holistic approach to wellness. Can you tell us a little bit more about holistic medicine and what that really means? And what do you see as some of the barriers to people living healthfully?
Yes, I think from my perspective, when I say holistic wellness, I mean that we take into account the mind, body, and spirit. So we want to look at each person as a whole, and we don't want to just say, I'm only going to focus, you know, on your head, or I'm only going to focus on your body. We want to look at how all of those things are interplaying, because they do all factor into one another. And I think that is one of the issues, is that people want to kind of take the feel bad, take pill kind of approach to how they seek their medical care, versus looking at other things that can be done in terms of lifestyle that can also have a positive benefit on their general health.
Do you think that's because people are just in such a hurry to get to feel better, or do you think it's maybe it's both, but that they really don't understand what good and healthy feels like?
You know, I definitely think that it's both. I think that we're in a very kind of hurried society right now, where everything is kind of quick, quick, quick. You want immediate information. We want immediate relief. And so some of the approaches that we recommend maybe are going to take a little bit longer for you to be able to feel better in terms of your general health. And I think that people don't always appreciate what a connection there is to, you know, the lifestyle that they're living and how they feel physically.
Well, I think it's great that you focus on trying to get them to develop that connection and that awareness, because what people often don't realize is the changes that they make and how they approach health impacts all the people around them and impacts their children and their children's children, and goes on for, you know, it can go up to 6 generations going forward. It makes such a big difference.
Absolutely. I hear that all the time when I sit down and I really start to dig into my patients and dig into their past. We find that a lot of these patterns are generational, just like you mentioned. And if I can, with my encounter with this one person, just change their frame of mind, maybe even about body image, maybe this whole concept of, you know, not liking your body and trying to change your body has been something that's been passed down from generation to generation. But with this one encounter, if I can just teach that person to love their body as is, and that's the gift that they can then give their children, and that can be the new generational switch that takes place, it can be very powerful.
Absolutely. You know, I was listening to a conversation at around the pool, and it was a conversation between a mom and a dad talking about, you know, how do you find that balance with children with that, the body image and that perception of it? Because, you know, dad wants them totally covered up, and mom's trying to get the balance of being covered up, but yet not making them feel bad about their body. So how do you get people to see that balance?
Wow, that's an interesting question. You know, we get that a lot. In fact, we just recently gave a talk at a local organization here that really focuses on kids and parents, and we were talking to them specifically about body image, about how to kind of create that healthy relationship with your body. And I think on the one hand, there's been a lot of objectification, especially of young girls in terms of body. Some of the clothing and things that they wear is not as modest as I was used to. But at the same time, we do want to give them those messages of, you know, love your body, be proud of your body, think of the great things that your body does for you. And not just from a comparison standpoint. So I do think it's a balance that we have to strike, and we have to be somewhat delicate in how we navigate that. But definitely my overall goal with my adolescent patients especially is to work on that healthy relationship and not always looking to change it.
Mm-hmm. That's great that you focus on that. Before we go to break, I want to ask you, because I love asking all my guests, what motivates you to live healthy and share your message with others? And I know you've talked about your training and how you got inspired by this, but most people have a big why, either something that happened in their life or a reason why they really focus on health and wellness. I know for me, it's so that I stay healthy and can be here for my grandchildren and be part of their growing up. But what is your big why?
That's a great question. I think the first kind of moment that made me really want to shift how I saw my role in the medical community was I was going for a walk with my mom and one of her friends years ago, and they were talking about their encounters with their physicians. And both of them were feeling like they were going to older male physicians who were not really listening to them. They felt like they weren't being heard and that their feelings weren't being validated. And I was at that moment really feeling like, I want to change that relationship. I don't want it to be that you go to your doctor and there's just kind of like a finger wagging that goes on and them kind of telling you what to do. I want it to be more of a partnership that we're both working together for you to achieve your ultimate happy, healthy life. And that was the moment for me where I felt like I want to change that kind of perception of the doctor-patient relationship. And so that's one thing that I strive to do through my practice, is to really kind of partner with people to meet their goals together.
I love that. And it's a great reminder for us that children really do pick up on the things that we're saying, on all those conversations that are going on around them, even if we don't know it.
Absolutely, and it can be very impactful.
It can. Well, I'm glad you decided to make that change. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back from break, I really want to dig in and talk about the different types and, you know, severity of eating disorders and some of the common signs.
Absolutely.
This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. My theme for the year is Say Yes to Success. And guess what? Our annual International Conference and Business Expo that's coming up August 6th through the 9th, we're going to have not only a wonderful lineup of speakers and thought leaders like CNN's Soledad O'Brien or Matthew Knowles, the famous father of the famous Beyonce, and Jean Smart from Designing Women, but this year, you are going to be part of the experience. This is one of, if not the only conference that will balance your experience between learning from the wisdom of great speakers to hands-on living it through laser coaching, journaling, and interacting and sharing with other conference attendees. Oh yeah, and we have the best party in town on Saturday night, dancing till you drop to one of the best bands in Dallas. Visit eWomenNetwork.com for details and how you can be part of this life-changing experience as you embrace your yes to success.
Beautiful job, eWomen!
Do you struggle with your weight or your health?
Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Dr. Leslie Williams. And before the break, we were talking about holistic medicine and having conversations about mind, body, and spirit, how it's all connected. It's just not one part. And I'd like to ask you, Dr. Williams, what are the different types and levels of severity of eating disorders? Can you kind of give us some context around that?
Sure. So when we think of eating disorders, the one that most people classically think of is anorexia nervosa. And that is when you engage in significant restriction of your caloric intake to the point where your body weight might be very low or you have difficulty maintaining your weight. And people with anorexia can engage in restriction, but they can also engage in binge eating and purging behaviors as well. And then the next eating disorder that we think of is bulimia nervosa, and that's where the primary eating disorder behaviors are engaging typically in binge eating, which is eating like a large volume of food within a short period of time, and then engaging in some type of compensatory mechanism, whether it be through vomiting or laxatives or sometimes even restricting people that might restrict their intake for a long period of time and then eat a large amount of food. We also have binge eating disorder, and that's the one that I'm excited about just being added to the DSM-5, which is kind of like the Bible of psychiatric disorder diagnoses. And so binge eating disorder has just been added, and that's when patients eat a large amount of food repeatedly. So it's not just your typical Thanksgiving dinner, if you will. It's that someone, and frequently it's emotionally motivated, but they'll eat large volumes of food, but they don't engage in that compensatory behavior that you see in bulimia nervosa. And mm-hmm. So those are the top three eating disorders typically that we deal with. And then there are some people that might have elements of each that might fall into the other specified feeding or eating disorder category, where they don't quite meet the criteria of anorexia, bulimia, or binge eating, but they still have some significant alterations in their relationship with food.
Do you also see people that don't have issues that are maybe would typically fall under one of these classifications that really want to get a handle with what they're eating?
Well, I think we're seeing more and more people that had struggles with their relationship with food historically, but it never really had a name to it. And now they're able to kind of add that nomenclature to it and then at the same time get some treatment for it. So you'll have people that I've struggled with years with when I would get emotional, I overeat, and as a result, maybe they have gained a lot of weight over a period of time and they really were never able to deal with those underlying emotional issues that were causing them to eat in the first place. And so it's been great from my perspective in working with this population that there is a whole nother section of people that historically maybe weren't able to get treatment that now have that access because of binge eating disorder being added to the DSM-5 criteria.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that people who fall into the obese category generally suffer from one of these eating issues?
There's a large percentage. I think some research has reported up to 50% of people that are obese also have an underlying eating disorder. And so frequently, up until now, the focus has been on, you know, weight loss surgery and doing some type of surgical intervention for their weight and all of the health issues that can potentially go along with that. But now I'm hoping that the shift will be more towards determining whether or not there is an underlying issue, and if so, addressing that more therapeutically, and if not, focusing more on how can we make sure that that person is living their healthiest life rather than every time they have an encounter with a healthcare professional, they're only focused on their weight. I hear that oftentimes from patients.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to get to that underlying issue so that it can change, and that would make sense, because do you see that typically just going on a diet, just dealing with diet alone, doesn't get results?
Yeah, if there's an underlying issue that's going on, just going on a diet isn't going to fix it. In fact, you know, even having, for instance, a bypass surgery, I have lots of patients that come to me status post bypass surgery. And again, they went in with the idea that all I have to do is get this weight loss surgery, and then I'm going to get the body that I wanted, and then I'm going to be happy and live this great life. Well, you know, after the surgery takes place, they really have never dealt with some of those underlying kind of psychological or emotional issues. And they have the surgery and they're like, oh no, I'm not happy. It's because there was all this other underlying issues that they needed to deal with. And so we start kind of peeling back those layers.
That's fascinating. So can you tell us what some of the most common signs would be of someone who has an eating disorder and should be looking, you know, look at someone for help and assistance and support?
Absolutely. I think weight fluctuations is a big sign, whether it's, you know, significant amount of weight gain or weight loss within a short period of time. Or I'll have patients where their weight fluctuates constantly up and down. So those might be some things that you would look at. Kind of a hyper-focus on food and exercise, you know, and that being something that gets to the point where it really interferes with their ability to do, you know, regular activities like spend time with friends and family. They may not want to do that because they're so hyper-focused on their extreme exercise regimen, or they might not feel comfortable going out to eat because they have put so many dietary restrictions on themselves that going to a restaurant is really uncomfortable. So those are some of the things, you know, weighing multiple times a day, those types of things are some kind of red flags that maybe there's some underlying eating issues going on.
Interesting. Can someone suffer from an eating disorder and not know it?
Absolutely. I frequently get patients that come in and say, you know, I didn't know what was happening with me was an eating disorder until a friend or a family member or a healthcare professional actually pointed it out to me and, you know, explained to me what an eating disorder was and that I met criteria for that.
Interesting. Because you would think it would be something that they would be aware of, but I guess when you think about it, so many of the things we do automatically, subconsciously, without even thinking about it. I don't know how many times I talk to people and, you know, they'll say, wait a minute, I just had a full bowl of whatever it is in front of me. I didn't eat all that. And, you know, they're the only one in the room, so they did it. I think we do so many things without even thinking about it and paying attention.
Absolutely. And there's so many things that are kind of normalized within our society. It's gotten to the point where it's normal to constantly talk about your body, to constantly compare to others' bodies, to constantly, you know, it's become so normal that oftentimes it's difficult to tease out when it's reached the level of being kind of excessive. And I also think that people have this conception that to have a body, to have an eating disorder, you have to have that severe body image distortion. You know, they're like, oh, I'm doing this not because I'm trying to lose weight, but because I'm trying to control my emotions. That could still be an eating disorder, even if you're not motivated in a way that you want to change your body.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I think a lot of people today, because they may, if they have weight fluctuation, I know a number of people that have done this, in their closets they have multiple sizes of clothes, so they may lose weight, but they'll keep their clothes for when they were bigger because they may go back to that. And mm-hmm. would things like that be a sign that they should maybe get some help?
I think so, at least to be further evaluated, because it's not typical that someone would have such drastic weight swings that you would need to have multiple wardrobes to mm-hmm. accommodate that. So that would kind of be a red flag to me that we might want to look into that more. What's happening when you have that weight loss or that weight gain? What's happening in your life? What changes have taken place? Because if we just look at the body in its natural sense, it would be abnormal for your body to go through such drastic swings without there being some type of behavior that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. What kind of resistance do you get, or do you, maybe you don't, maybe I'm assuming that, when you start to have that conversation with someone and really get them to see that there's something going on, is it easy for them then to take a step back and start to see it once you point it out, or do they go through a process?
I definitely think it's a process, and that's one of the things I love about relationship building with my patients, is that oftentimes people might come to me and they are not even thinking eating disorders. They're just coming here for your typical annual physical. And once I kind of hear their story and hear some of the things that they're struggling with, it may be a red flag to me that there might be an underlying eating issue here. And so I will really judge how they present in terms of how much information they're open to hearing right off the bat. So I might say, hey, you know, you mentioned this. For instance, I had a patient that had been on Weight Watchers for years, had lost a considerable amount of weight, and had gotten to the point where they could not be comfortable at their current weight. They were constantly obsessing about losing more weight. They had spent the past several years writing down every single thing that they ate or drank or put in their body. They had gotten to the point that when they went out to a restaurant, for instance, to eat, they felt like they had to compensate for that, and they would spend multiple days before and after that meal altering their exercise regimen or restricting their intake to make up for it. And they didn't really see that as being an issue because they had been overweight prior, so they felt like this was them being controlled and doing what they needed to do to be healthy. And so as we kind of built a relationship and built some rapport, and I was able to point out that that isn't really a healthy relationship with food and exercise, that, you know, you want to get to the point where you can go out with friends or you can skip a workout and not be, you know, obsessive about it or filled with guilt about it. And so as we've worked through that together, I think they're really appreciative because they had resolved themselves that they were going to have that type of relationship with food and exercise for the rest of their life. And now we're working more on freedom and balance.
I love that freedom and balance. And we need to take another real quick break. And when we come back, I want to continue this conversation. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. choose an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com. That's managingdirector@ewomennetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Dr. Leslie Williams, and we've been talking about eating disorders and having a great conversation before the break, and I'm going to continue that. And Dr. Williams, I'd love to have you share just a little bit. I want to ask you, can eating disorders be both physical and psychological? I know we talked about some of the mindset things, but can there be some physical reasons and things that go into having an eating disorder?
Absolutely. I'll frequently have patients that maybe their eating disorder started with some type of physical ailment, be it maybe like a GI illness, sometimes even the flu. And what might have happened is that they lost a lot of weight, or they had to become very hyper-focused on their food during that period of time, and that might be what kind of gets the ball rolling, if you will. Frequently, I hear people say that I was ill, I lost a lot of weight, and immediately people started making positive comments, because that's kind of the society we live in. If anyone loses weight, we don't even ask the reason why. The first thing people say is, oh, you look great, you look wonderful, what are you doing? And then someone internalizes that, like, wait a minute, did I look bad before? Did I need to lose weight? Now they're saying that I look better. And sometimes it'll start kind of that mental conversation in terms of being more focused on your body and how people are perceiving it. And that might be the catalyst that begins then down the road of some eating disorder behaviors.
That's really interesting, because, you know, I think about as we encounter people and when they do lose weight, we do, you know, if it's made a big difference, we do make a comment on that. And you don't think about how they might internalize what we're saying.
Absolutely. Sometimes we don't even take time to ask. Someone might have lost a lot of weight because they're going through chemotherapy or something, and we never really ask. It's like the immediate response is just to congratulate them. And I see that especially with young kids. For instance, if I have a young child, oftentimes when they're diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, for instance, they will initially go through a drastic weight decrease as their body does not have the insulin that it needs to be able to process glucose. And so they'll lose a lot of weight. So here you have a 10-year-old who never thought once about her body. She loses 10 pounds within a short period of time and goes to school, and everyone's making positive comments. So then she thinks, well, wait a minute. Did they think that I was unhealthy before? Did they think that I was, you know, unattractive before? And then she gets diagnosed with diabetes. She then gets the insulin that her body needs, and oftentimes they will rapidly, you know, regain that weight, and sometimes even in excess of where they were before. And so then it begins that kind of mental game of, okay, now do people not think that I look good? And now I have this medicine that I'm going to have to take for the rest of my life that's going to make me gain weight in their mind. And so it really, we find that that population particularly is very vulnerable to development of eating disorders, even though it starts with, you know, the medical diagnosis of diabetes.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting, because it makes me think about how we respond to people, just to really maybe with this conversation, have people be aware of it, because we don't know how someone's going to internalize what we say. We want to acknowledge it if they've really been working at it, but maybe finding out what's going on first so we don't jump to conclusions.
Exactly. You know, acknowledging or maybe just saying, hey, you know, you look different. What's been going on? Because we never know, you know, what they're struggling with and how they might internalize your comments.
How can parents have a conversation with their kids to see what's going on, if they either are starting to gain weight or starting to lose weight, to make sure that it's being done, you know, healthfully, and not that they're not starting to develop some unhealthy habits or doing things that might harm their body?
Well, I think definitely asking questions of your children of, you know, how do they perceive themselves? And, you know, getting a little bit more information about how they see their bodies, if they're comparing to their peers, if they're unhappy with their bodies, that's always a good way for parents to start. And typically, as a parent, you will have some idea of what your kids are eating, especially at least for breakfast and dinner. But if you notice weight fluctuations, getting some more information regarding what they're doing during lunch is going to be really helpful.
Mm-hmm. That is a great conversation for parents, an awareness for parents to be, you know, watching what their kids are doing and paying more attention to it. I think often we get so busy that we just assume they're eating the right way and they're doing the right things and don't always acknowledge or aren't aware of it as early as we possibly could.
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing eating disorder behaviors younger and younger. I just had a 10-year-old, you know, in my office within
the past week.
And so, you know, the more that we can kind of understand the relationships that they're having with their peers, how they feel about their body, their relationships with food, we really try to support this idea of no good foods or bad foods. I think in the media there's been so much attention recently to childhood obesity and kind of trying to stop that at all costs, that we really haven't taken time to acknowledge some of the judgments that we have put on food and how we can make kids hyper-focused on food. And we think that it's developmentally appropriate for kids to be able to go to a birthday party and eat a piece of cake, but also, you know, be able to enjoy an apple as a snack. And so that's where we really try to kind of encourage that balance with how they perceive food.
Mm-hmm. Do you start people when they come into you? Do you start people kind of on a diet modification or eating differently, or do you start by, I guess you start by figuring out what they're doing, and then are there a couple maybe things you could share with us on what people should pay attention to, or maybe something they might be doing that they're not aware of?
Sure. I think when I first meet with a patient, I definitely want to assess what brings them in and where they're struggling, what their issue is. And then from there, I try to figure out if their goal is realistic. For instance, you know, I've had people contact me and they'll say, oh, I want to come in because I want to lose, you know, 200 pounds in, you know, 6 months or something outrageous. And I just let them know I'm probably not the right person. What I really focus on is healthy lifestyle and making slow, permanent changes to how you do things versus kind of like that quick fix. So I really try to assess why they're coming to me and how we can work together to come up with some realistic goals that we can achieve together.
It's interesting when you say that, because I was talking to someone, it was probably last year, but we were talking about she wanted to lose weight and told me how much she wanted to lose. And so I just asked her, I said, so when's the last time you were at that weight? And It's funny, but it's not funny. And she said, about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's like she had an unrealistic expectation of what she wanted to do and where she wanted to go versus focusing, like you talk about making those slow, permanent changes. I always tell people that if they eat healthfully and make good choices, they're going to find their natural healthy weight without having to struggle and go on a diet.
Exactly. I always say kind of the easiest thing that I can do is help someone change their frame of mind, you know, versus trying to, you know, achieve this goal of a size zero, if you will, when you've never been there. Maybe what we need to do is work on your relationship with your body and mm-hmm. your overall self-esteem, and that's going to be the easiest, quickest fix in my mind, and then making sure that you're living that healthy, happy lifestyle so that you can enjoy life to the fullest and not be so hyper-focused.
Mm-hmm. Now that's great advice and a great way to look at that. Is there a group in particular or a certain demographic that's more prone to eating disorders?
You know, we're finding eating disorders really in all different demographics and all different groups. I would say in terms of the most vulnerable times we see it is often adolescent girls, usually around puberty and then again around that transition to college. But even though that's historically been kind of the window, I see males, I see, you know, middle-aged women, I see all kinds of patients. You know, I see Latina women, I see African-American women, I see all different types of patients that are struggling with eating disorders. So I think the more that we get the word out about the prevalence, the more comfortable people are going to be acknowledging their behaviors and getting the help that they need.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, and that's great, because I think it really all starts with awareness and then realizing that there's great resources like yourself for help. We're going to go ahead and take our final break, and when we come back, I want to talk just a little bit more about some of the steps that people can take to help as much as they can avoid eating disorders. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. My theme for the year is Say Yes to Success. And guess what? Our annual International Conference and Business Expo that's coming up August 6th through the 9th, we're going to have not only a wonderful lineup of speakers and thought leaders like CNN's Soledad O'Brien or Matthew Knowles, the famous father of the famous Beyonce, and Jean Smart from Designing Women, but this year you are going to be part of the experience. This is one of, if not the only conference that will balance your experience between learning from the wisdom of great speakers to hands-on living it through laser coaching, journaling, and interacting and sharing with other conference attendees. Oh yeah, and we have the best party in town on Saturday night, dancing till you drop to one of the best bands in Dallas. Visit eWomenNetwork.com for details and how you can be part of this life-changing experience as you embrace your yes to success.
Beautiful job, eWomen!
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Dr. Leslie Williams, and we've been talking about eating disorders and having a great discussion on having conversations with your kids on the physical and psychological effect of eating disorders. And I'd like to ask you, Dr. Williams, we've talked a little bit about it, but what are some of the steps that people can take to avoid eating disorders or to have more self-awareness and a more realistic self-image?
One of the first steps that I recommend all of my patients do is to just acknowledge how many times we make comments about ourselves, our physical appearance, our bodies, and the bodies of other people. And we even sometimes do kind of like a no fat talk day, or a day where you're just not going to make any negative comments about your body or the body of someone else. And just that awareness, once you start to recognize it, you see how much time that we spend kind of focused on our physical appearance. And so that is sometimes a first step to just kind of acknowledging how much it's become the fabric of what we do in this country, and being able to shift the focus. So that's one, I guess, initial first step.
I like that first step because I think it really all starts with awareness and what we're doing to really bring that front and center in our mind. I think the things we've talked about today, too, really help us. For me, it's really even a different way to think about obesity. Because I think many people often think that it's just a matter of willpower, but I think there's so much more that goes into it and that's probably affecting people than it seems on the surface.
Absolutely. And so we definitely want to see it from a different perspective. Oftentimes when we see people that we consider to be larger, that automatically there's a negative connotation that goes with that. They're fat, they're lazy, they lack willpower. When in actuality, you know, we were made in all different shapes and sizes, and that just because someone is larger than someone else, it might be their genetic makeup, it might be that they're struggling with an eating disorder, but maybe not. And I'm really a huge advocate of the Health at Every Size movement, where it really looks at overall healthy lifestyle and making sure that people are, you know, eating a balanced diet and they have movement and activity in their daily life. And you could do all of those things and still be larger than what society has deemed appropriate, but also be very healthy. And so I think we always assume that if someone's larger, that they're unhealthy or they have health problems, and that might not be the case.
That's a great reminder. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the creation of the Liberation Center and what makes the programs at the Liberation Center so unique?
Sure. I think I worked for over 10 years in the eating disorder industry, primarily in an inpatient setting. And for me, I really wanted a place that just met the individual need of each patient. I felt like oftentimes the patients were kind of provided with a program and told you kind of need to fit into this general program that's already been created, versus looking at the patient and looking at their specific needs and building a program around them. And so I think that's what makes Liberation unique. We're small. We have very individualized programming. We really are able to meet the needs of patients regardless of their life stage. It's a great opportunity for women, for instance, that even work, you know, that are able to get some treatment, but maybe even be able to work or be able to go home and still tuck their kids in at night, but get the treatment that they need for themselves during the day. So I like that flexibility.
Do you just work with patients in person, or what if someone's not in the local area?
If someone's not in the local area, we might be able to chat with them over the telephone to get some idea of what their needs are, and it might be that we have a local referral that we could send them to.
Okay, that's great to know. Can you tell us how people can learn more about the Liberation Center or connect with you if they want more information?
Absolutely. Everyone's welcome to go to our website. It's liberationcenter.com, and that's where you can get more information about the center in general. There's also a contact form if you have specific questions that you can send those to us, and we're happy to field those questions. So that's definitely one way that we can connect.
Can you, as we wind up our time together, can you give our listeners just one action item that they can implement in the next week to start creating a healthier future for themselves and the ones they love?
Absolutely. I think the biggest action item to just get started on being more mindful is to turn off your cell phone, turn off your computer, just spend 15 minutes alone somewhere quietly and just be. You know, it's something that it sounds so simple, but it's something that we rarely do in today's society is spend 15 to 30 minutes of just quiet and calm and really just connect with ourselves and with our thoughts. We're always on the go, 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 go. And so that's one of the things that we really try to encourage each of our patients to do is just be more mindful, not only in what you're eating on a daily basis, in the conversations that you have, in your daily activities, but just taking a few moments to be mindful can be really powerful to help you kind of organize your thoughts and figure out what your goals are for your life and what having a happy, healthy life means to you.
I like that, and it reminds me, I love the thing about being more mindful and being present. There was something going around on Facebook within the last few days where it was, it looked like a big cell phone between the two people in the bed or between the mother and the child on the couch. It was a great visual because I think we get so focused in, you know, our staying connected in our technology that we forget to take and really be present in the time that we're with other people and often forget how to communicate with them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's communication is a lost art form because right now all the communication that we frequently do is very impersonal. But just being able to have that kind of alone time with yourself or even your alone time with your spouse or with a friend where it's just the two of you without any other interruptions and really having that connection is huge. So that's usually my first step on a road to kind of happy, healthy living.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time. I know you have a really busy schedule, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to really have this conversation with us and help people see that there's help available to them if they need help, and there's a lot of resources available, and not to be afraid or embarrassed, but really seek help and, you know, let's work together to get people the solutions that they need so they can really live a healthy and happy life.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure. So until next week, remember that even small changes can make a positive difference in your health and your life. Healthy choices you make every day add up over time to create a healthy future for yourselves and your family. Be sure to join me each week as we continue the conversation on how to build a healthier relationship with food and with yourself. And remember to go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com and be part of the conversation. Click on our Facebook link, and I want to invite everyone this week to share what they're going to do to have a healthy and happy week, what they're going to do with their family to make that shift. Share what you loved about today's conversation, too, and ask us what questions you have so we can get you more answers. Take care and have a great and healthy week. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. Each week at this time, we bring you straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Join us next Thursday and every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on the EWN Radio Network. To get a replay of this week's show, listen to past shows, or contact Janelle, go to eatgreatlivewellradio.com. have a great week. And remember, you can choose to eat great and live well.